This program is intended for the blind and a print impaired audience. Hello and welcome to the May 2016 edition of Salute a Veteran Every Day. I'm John Lucy. This program is generously sponsored by Caliber Technologies, a leading supplier of OEM alternative ink and toner supplies, as well as printer service and office supplies, located in the Raleigh-Durham area. Caliber Technologies is a proud supporter of military families, one order at a time. To learn more, please visit www.calibertechnologies.com. That's www.calibertechnologies.com. Or call 919-439-7114. On this edition of the program, we continue with our conversation with William Bill Burris, a native of North Carolina and a resident of Raleigh. Bill entered the U.S. Navy as a recruit, the entry level of an enlisted man, with a goal of making the military a career. And what a career Bill experienced. Shortly after enlisting in the U.S. Navy, and while serving under General Douglas MacArthur in Japan during the reconstruction of that nation after World War II, Bill embarked on a path toward becoming an officer. His career lasted a remarkable 38 years, culminating in becoming a full colonel in the U.S. Army. On today's edition of Salute a Veteran Every Day, we pick up the story of William Bill Burris, Colonel, U.S. Army, retired, talking about his days at the West Point Military Academy and his years of service thereafter. Well, Colonel Bill, tell us what it was like being a plebe at the United States Military Academy at West Point. What was it like that?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say it's tough. Yeah. But anyway, to continue the story, we entered, and my class started with 641, I believe, the day we entered. That's what entered. And we graduated 469.
So there was some attrition.
Well, quite a bit.
Yeah.
And that happened two or three different ways. First of all, when you go in, it's you're a plebe for the first year. And for that summer, so you enter 3rd of July, and you all the rest of the summer they call Beast Barracks, and it really is a beast. And the upper class, well, the first classmen are responsible for running that Beast Barracks
beast.
8 weeks.
Why do they call it Beast?
Well, you know what a beast is.
Of course. It wasn't your most luxurious of accommodations.
I don't know. That's what it had been for years and years. They call it Beast Barracks. And they still do. They still call it Beast Barracks.
So that's kind of military vernacular.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway, in the training, they keep you busy every minute of the day up until 9 o'clock at night. And then you got to be in bed at 9 o'clock. So anyway, you get... It's more or less like basic training set more intensified that 8 weeks. To give me an example of some things that they do, like at night after dinner, there's certain hygiene things you have to do. And the first thing is what they call a shower formation. And back then, they've torn these buildings down now and put new ones up. But when I was there, they... the latrine, or the bathroom, you might say, is in the basement. And the buildings go up 4 stories. And anytime you needed to get a shower or go to the bathroom, it's in the basement. So they keep you busy all day long doing this, that, and the other, running. And anytime you're outside the barracks building, you have to double time, unless you're in formation. Then you'd be double timing too. But anyway, at night, they had what they call a shower formation. So right after dinner, they issued you a bathrobe, a thin cotton bathrobe. So you had to be stripped down in this bathrobe on, and then they get you out in the hall before you go down to the basement.
Okay.
And what you have is just a bathrobe on, and everybody has to stand out there with a hand like this with a bar of soap in
the hand. Extended in front of you.
Yeah, straight. And then your towel is folded over your arm. Mm-hmm. And then you're backed up against the wall, you know. They call it slap up against the wall.
Well, slap up against the wall.
Back up to the wall and get your back flat against that wall. And your chin in and all that stuff. And then they harass you for about 15 minutes before you ever go down to the basement to get the showers.
You mentioned harassing. Did you know it was part of the process, or did it bother you?
Well, it bothered me, but anyway, that mm-hmm. was tradition, and
yes.
they did it. And the other thing that bothered me, if I had gone to West Point the year I finished high school, I would have been a first classman when I went in as plea. And these guys were chewing me out, and I checked their dates of birth. And in some cases, I was older than some of them. And most of them, I was about the same age as a first class. So I'd already been enlisted for 3 years, so some of that was kind of funny to me. And sometimes I'd smirk, you know, smile.
And what happens when you smirk? Do you get something called a demerit or something like that?
Well, for that, they didn't do too much demerits.
Okay.
But they just chew you out and slap you back up against the wall again. Anyway, they did that for about 15 minutes. And then we went in, lined up, went down to the basement to get the showers. And the way they did this, they must have had 8 or 10 showers down there right in a row. And so they had to stand in front of your shower. They'd line you up, mm-hmm. stand in front. Everybody be in front of the shower. So the first classman was okay, reach in the shower, turn the shower, I want to adjust it, mm-hmm. warm or hot, or whatever you want.
Yeah.
So you reach in there and you do this real fast. And then they say, okay, step in the showers. You know, everything's on command.
Yeah.
So this whole line of 10 people, say, would step in the shower. And they say, okay, you got 3 minutes in the shower. So then you got the soap down, and then you want to get that soap off, before the shower's over. And then, of course, he'd be out there with a watch, timing that three. Okay, you got 30 seconds in the shower. You better get that soap off or something like mm-hmm. that. And sometimes you couldn't get it off before they say.
A couple extra words in there, too, probably along the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Showers over, cut the showers off. I don't care, cut the showers off.
Some people could probably have soap still on them,
yeah.
right?
So then you get out and you wipe down and all that. But the shower formation is not over.
Oh.
You still, after you do that, then they line you up in another adjacent room. And they had a table there, and the first classman on the far side of the table that you could put your feet on, lift the feet up, put on the table. So you had to do that in order, in a line. So when you got up to the table, you put 1 foot up on the table, and the first classman had a tube of this foot powder that GIs use, mm-hmm.
you
know.
I'm familiar with it.
So he'd sift that powder on your feet, and you got to work it in with your own fingers in between your toes and that was important because you train all day long with those boots on in the summertime, and back then athlete's feet mm-hmm. was prominent.
Mm-hmm. And the army travels on its feet.
And they were trying to prevent that if they could. After you finish that, you get another line and report to another first classman. And the standard report is you have to report that you have completed all your hygiene for the day. And then after that's all over, they march you back up. I was on the fourth floor. And then they give you about 10 minutes to get ready to go to bed. And they want you to write a letter home during that time. Because they were pretty hot on that, getting you to write home regular.
Quick.
Anyway, then you have to be in bed at 9 o'clock. So that's the way the summer went. It was just military training.
What was the academics like coming from a small high school where you said you didn't have the number of subjects that were required as the entrance, which you took care of? How intense was it?
Well, the thing about it is, like you say, I did attend a small school teaching the minimum number of subjects just to graduate. Mm-hmm. And when you go up there, they don't take any pity on you what your background is, like mine wasn't mm-hmm. very good academically. Mm-hmm. And they start right out with, in math, they give you a couple of days of more or less a review. So I had had that over at the prep school, so the first 2 days I did good.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they throw you right into calculus, which I never had calculus.
And you found that very interesting.
Man, that was something else. It was hard. It was hard for me. But I was able to pass. But then we had homework every night, mandatory study hall in your room. See, we went to the supper meal, and then when we came back, we had about 15 minutes to do whatever you need to do, errands and stuff. And then you had to be in your room from, it was 2.5 hours. I think it was 7:15 to 9-something. And you had to be in your room, and you had to be studying. Bedtime was 10:15. So the study hall was to 9:45, and that gave you 30 minutes to get a shower and whatever. 2.5 hours study hall went by pretty quick. And not only the calculus, but you had foreign language, which I never had. And
which subject did you choose? Which language did you choose?
I chose, they had five. Back then they taught five, to include Russian and French and Spanish, Portuguese, and one other. I forget what that was. But anyway, I chose French because I thought that would be easier. Mm-hmm. But I understand after I picked it that Spanish would have been easier. Anyway, they don't take any pity on you. You can say, well, I didn't have this in high school. Doesn't matter. You know, you all had to do the same work.
High requirements to be a leader of men in the United States Army. Very high requirements.
That's right. Now, I was competing with some, quite a few of my classmates had been to college 2 or 3 years. And they had foreign language, say, in college. They had it in high school.
Well, what a tribute it is to you to have to enter that, first of all, and then succeed. You know, it's hats off to you for that. We salute that part of your life. What did you take from this 4-year program, I guess it is? Mm-hmm. What were the basic traits that you think you learned that served you best in your years as an officer in the U.S. Army? What do you think those traits
Well, were? The main thing is for me was it teaches you to go beyond what you think you can do. You can do a lot more than you think you can do, physically and everything.
That especially is important when a combat situation.
That's true. And one of the things you learn that serves you in combat is you cannot, when everybody around you is falling apart, you got to maintain your attitude and everything. You can't get too excited. Because if you do, things are just going to fall apart.
Well, as a leader, you have to set the tone for those that you're leading.
And it taught me that, and it teaches you can go far beyond what you think you can do.
Well, Bill, let's jump ahead to graduation day. You've gotten successfully through the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. What went on graduation day?
Well, one of the big things for the plebes, the day before they had the graduation parade, they call mm-hmm. it. And after that parade, you know, you get back in central area and line up, and the upper class chews you out some more. And then they do what they call recognize you. Then we call it fall out. You don't have to brace anymore. And they come through line, shake your hand, call you by your first name. From that point on, you're an upperclassman. For the plebes, it's like graduation, even though, you know, the first class were graduating. And then you get a 30-day leave. You only leave the academy twice during the year as a plebe, because you have to stay there during the Christmas holidays. You don't get leave. that recognition was like graduation for plebes. Going ahead to my graduation, it just so happened that General Eisenhower is also a West Point graduate, and this was his 40th reunion. And in addition, he was a principal speaker. So after he gave his graduation address, to include him saying, 40 years ago, I was out there like you. And anyway, they give out diplomas, you know, by name, one at a time, which is a big deal. And you're lined up by class standing. And the first man, they call his name, and he walks up the ramp. And when he gets to the top, he salutes General Eisenhower. And with one hand, he shakes your hand. The other hand, he passes your diploma. And, of course, you got all your parents and relatives out there in the audience, and that's a big deal for them to see that.
Quite a day for a young man from a small county in North Carolina.
That's right. And my daddy was a big politician. And so when he went back home, I'm sure he is telling all his friends, there's the President of the United States right there. I was almost close enough to shake his hand and myself.
But you did. And you got your commission as a military officer in the branch of infantry.
That's right.
So tell us about your assignments after West Point. Let's go through some of the things that stick out in your mind in your various capacities, and you've had many.
Okay, the first thing that sticks out in my mind, the first class, most everybody, they allow you to buy a new car about 60 days before you graduate. So everybody has a new car, the Ford or Chevrolet, probably, because they were the cheapest. So anyway, after graduation, there I was with my brand new car, and they give us a 60-day paid leave.
Wow.
It's not something you got to make, you know, you have to accrue it later. They just give it to you. I don't know why, but they did. So I went home for 2 months.
With
rest
your
of the
new
summer.
Car.
With my new car. Class ring, diploma, I had it all.
Did you meet the future Mrs. Colonel Burris?
Well, I'd known her all my life. We grew up together, but for some reason we didn't date, but we went out in the same group.
Okay.
Back when we were growing up. But it just so happened that she was working in Raleigh then. And
her name is Dorinda.
Dorinda. And there was a local girl that got married a week or two after I got home with my new car.
So she
came home for the same wedding. So after the wedding was over, I asked her if she would like to ride my new car.
Oh, wow.
So that's
commissioned Army officer in a new car. Wow.
And I was wearing my uniform that day, too.
What a man.
For that wedding.
What a man.
So anyway, we went out the next night and the next night too, and then during the summer she came home three or four times, I guess, from Raleigh weekends, and that's what got us started. But we didn't get married until 2 years later.
But you've been married how many years now?
58
years.
We've been married.
And you know, I think it's going to work. She's a delightful lady. We've enjoyed meeting her as well as yourself. Let's talk a little bit about your initial assignments, and especially those that took you to the country of Vietnam, not once, but twice.
Okay, well, when you get commissioned in the Army, it's not over the training. You got a lot of training to go through then, so... If you went infantry like I did, the initial training was at Fort Benning, Georgia. That's the infantry school.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through that course lasted about 4 months. And that's more or less like basic training, except more intensified. When you finish that, back when I was in that time frame, you had to go to either airborne or Ranger School, or both. So I went to Ranger School.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to start. We went home Christmas Eve, come back, and started that course. And that's pretty darn rough. And just I'll just mention a couple of things.
Sure.
The first part of it is right there at Fort Benning. You learn demolitions and a lot of physical training. I mean, a lot.
A lot of PT.
And
yes.
That lasted 2 or 3 weeks. And then we went to, they took us down to Florida, which is the jungle part of it, I guess, or swamp. It's all wet down there. Where they trained us anyway, low country. Stayed wet all the time.
And, that, of course, that came in handy when you had service in Southeast Asia.
Oh, yeah. And then you had the mountain phase, which is in North Georgia, up in the mountains, and you did rappelling. Mm-hmm. I'd never done that before in my life, but you know how that works.
And now you can.
And so, yeah, I could. I don't know if I could now or not. But anyway, that's the last part of it, and you get you graduate. Either you finish in good shape or not. If you do, you get to wear a ranger tam up here mm-hmm. on your shoulder mm-hmm. forever.
Forever,
yeah.
Yes.
So I finished that.
Quite
and then,
an accomplishment.
And then went to my first assignment, Fort Polk, Louisiana, which is out in the boondocks. Then I went to Fort
Swampy
Hood.
Swampy boondocks.
Then from there I went to Fort Hood and did basically the same thing. And from there I went to back to the infantry school for the advanced course. They got advanced. Now, that course is a whole year, just like from September to June. And that's more advanced infantry stuff. And then from there, I went to Germany for 2 years. And I got assigned, after 2 years, I got assigned as an aide to a general that was stationed in France with NATO.
I see.
So I went there for a year and did that, was an aide for this two-star general. And then I came back and went to 3rd Infantry at Fort Myer, Virginia. That's an official Army ceremonial unit. And it was primarily ceremonial to include burial detail over in Arlington mm-hmm. Cemetery, because that's right mm-hmm. next door.
Sure.
And one thing, when I was there, President Hoover, of course, he wasn't president. He was president a long time before that. But when he died, he laid in the state at the Capitol Rotunda for 2 days. And I was the, what they call, the site control officer there. So I spent 2 days mm-hmm. over there, and we slept a little bit down in the basement of the Capitol.
What a historic assignment.
So anyway, after that was over, by then the Vietnamese War was ginning up, and I got orders to go to Vietnam.
This is mid-60s now you're speaking
This out? Would have been, I actually got the orders in December of 65.
Okay.
Matter of fact, on my birthday.
Happy birthday.
3 December, I got orders.
Something in the middle.
To Vietnam that day, I also got promoted to major. Same day.
Congratulations. Not a bad day, huh?
So
not a bad day.
I was had orders to go to Vietnam the following April with another 8-week school at Fort Holabird, Maryland, which was intelligence.
You know, that's something that maybe those who have not served in the military or as extensively as you have don't quite get or understand or are aware of, that there's a lot of training
that's right.
that goes into the military services, and especially at the officer level. It's not just a couple eight-week programs and you're done. There's much more than that.
No, so, there's a whole series of schools you got in a career, yes. certain schools you have to go to.
So take us to Vietnam then.
Well, from there I went to, after that school, I went to Vietnam, and I was assigned initially to the 173rd Airborne Brigade in intelligence. That's what it was. That's a staff job. It's not a command position.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I had that for a few months, and that's really where I got initiated after I'd been there about 2 months. We were out on the operation with a base camp in the rubber plantations. You know about that. So anyway, we were in position at the command post, and we had learned that a Vietnamese, friendly Vietnamese convoy had been ambushed going from one location to another. And they got beat up pretty bad. So that my boss told me to get a helicopter and fly over there and find out, you know, what had happened. Well, I did that. So we flew over and landed on the road, you know, where this battle had been. It was, the battle was over when we got there. But they hadn't policed up the dead and so forth.
Yeah.
So after we landed on the road, I saw a 2.5-ton Army truck coming. And it was bringing the Viet Cong, which is the bad guys.
Oh, yes, we know. Yes.
They
yes,
had
yes.
This truck was loaded with bodies. And so it came up where we were and stopped. And so I guess it was the South Vietnamese soldiers got up on the truck and were throwing these bodies over on the road.
On the road?
And
why on the road?
And then, well, I don't know. I wasn't there when when they disposed.
Okay.
Whatever they do, I don't know.
Okay.
I wasn't there for that.
Okay.
But anyway, I did notice that when they the bodies were on the road, they started searching the bodies, you know, looking for something that would give some intelligence. And I do remember that this included, you know, getting everything in their pockets, to include their wallets. And I remember this one guy pulled a wallet out and kind of opened it up, and it was full of pictures just like yours and mine is. Girlfriends or wives, maybe even wives, and they were nice looking. Vietnamese are nice looking people,
and that's some of the things we don't hear much about.
Yeah,
when you go through that and come in real contact.
Anyway, these were the enemy, so to speak, but seeing them being searched like that, and seeing the wallets and everything, just like we have, that makes you think about what war is. Because that could have been us, too.
So it definitely made an impression on you. It stayed with you all these years.
Yeah, and that was really my first close combat experience, was that.
We thank you for being with us today, and be sure to catch us next month on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This is John Lucy speaking. This program is generously sponsored by Caliber Technologies, a leading supplier of OEM alternative ink and toner supplies, as well as printer service and office supplies, located in the Raleigh-Durham area. Caliber Technology is a proud supporter of military families, one order at a time. To learn more, please visit www.calibertechnologies.com or dial 919-439-7114. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience.